in just a moment, American Forum of the Year. But first, take a beautiful girl and a flirtatious young man, mix in some delightful music as sung by Gordon Macrae and Lucille Norman, and you have all the elements of tomorrow's Railroad Hour program. And the Railroad Hour is just one of the big musical shows in your Monday evening of music on NBC. You'll also hear the premiere of a melodic new show called The Best of All, featuring songs by your favorite composers. Monday also means the ever-popular Telephone Hour with Igor Gorin as guest and a stirring concert by the 48-piece Band of America. And now stay tuned for American Forum of the Air on NBC. The National Broadcasting Company presents transcribed the American Forum of the Air, America's oldest unrehearsed discussion program. This week, the American Forum of the Air presents a discussion of the topic, What's at Stake in the Fall Elections? And here with us to discuss this question are Senator Homer Ferguson, Republican of Michigan, and Senator Mike Mulroney, Democrat of Oklahoma. But before the debate begins, here is a message of importance. The old expression, it's a small world, has new meaning today. The world has grown even smaller. In fact, in some ways, it's too small for comfort. With modern long-range aviation, enemy planes could reach the United States from any part of the world in a matter of hours. A devastating surprise attack could occur at any time. Now, of course, our nation has taken steps to protect us. There is an extensive radar network to detect the approach of planes, but radar cannot do the entire job. That's up to us as individual citizens. And right now, the Air Defense Command needs 300,000 more volunteers for its Ground Observer Corps. This Ground Observer Corps is made up of patriotic citizens who contribute a few hours of their spare time each week. Both men and women, from teenage up, can join the Ground Observer Corps and perform a valuable service to our country. Write or phone your nearest Civil Defense Center, or write to Ground Observer Corps, Washington 25, D.C. Remember Pearl Harbor and join the Ground Observer Corps. The founder and moderator of the American Forum of the Year, Theodore Granick, today has asked Stephen McCormick to be guest moderator. Mr. McCormick.
What is at stake in the elections this fall? A number of important subjects, no doubt about that, and our two guests from the Senate today are well qualified to discuss them. Let's have a question here. Mr. Carson, you have one.
Yes, Senator Mulroney, the president in his address to the nation this week said that the present farm policy was harmful both to the farmers and to the nation as a whole. Now, do you think that the administration's farm program is right for the farmer and the nation?
Well, Mr. Carson, let me put it this way. I think the present farm program administered by Secretary Benson is very harmful to the farmers as a whole of this nation. But why add them future disaster by lowering the support prices by another 5 or 10%? It's been the administration of the program that has wrecked the farm economy. But now they're proposing additional disaster in cutting under the support prices that have helped us so much through the years.
Senator Ferguson, you've got a real interest in this.
Well,
in your state.
I can't see it that way at all. What the Mr. Benson is trying to do, and honestly doing, and which I think every man has a right to do, is to obey the law. And that's all Benson is doing. He is obeying the law, and when it says to support a particular crop at a certain price, he feels that the law requires him to do that. Now, what he wants to do, and what the president wants to do, is to change the law so that he can do it properly for both the consumer and for the farmer.
Could I add one thing right there, though?
Go ahead, Senator.
But the law says that Mr. Benson is supposed to be the Secretary of Agriculture. He couldn't do a better job for the processors or for industry than he has been doing to encourage speculators to raid the farmers' prices. From the very day he took office, he said he didn't like farm price supports, which was a signal to the boys on the cotton board and in the grain pit and dealing in farm commodities that they could safely undercut the farmers' prices.
Well, the farmer's prices can't be undercut if the farmer wants to sell to the government. That's what's wrong with the program, that the farmer can sell any amount of wheat, corn, cotton, peanuts, rice, and tobacco that he raises, and he can sell it to the government at 90% of parity. And
yes,
the government
Mr.
must buy it and put it in storage. That's what's wrong with it. You're talking about a different thing of on the commodity market.
Oh, no. What we try to do, and the whole philosophy, I will say to my distinguished friend, has been to put a floor under the farm prices so that then the prices will go up from that floor. Mr. Benson, because he started from the first to condemn and to say he despised farm price supports, has caused the prices to go down to the floor, so the government's had to buy more and more commodities.
Senator, aren't you really advocating what Senator Ferguson said there? In other words, isn't it an invitation, the Democratic program, to produce all they can produce and then we'll buy it? Just, you're saying almost as if you, to draw an analogy, General Motors, produce all the automobiles you can produce and all you can't sell, we'll buy it.
Well, let's just look at the record on Mr. Benson's program. He says if you drop the support prices, the farmers will reduce their production. That's his theory. That's the whole thesis. That's Eisenhower's program, to cut the surpluses. Well, he dropped the dairy price surpluses, supports, from 90% to 75%. The result has been the farmers have brought more milk into town. We're buying more pounds of butter. We're buying more dried milk. And consequently, it proves the fallacy, which many of us from the farm areas have said all along, that if the support price is down, the farmer will produce more to try and bring his income back to where it was.
Well, let's see, Senator, Mr. Krebs, go ahead.
Let's get back to the political impact of this thing. Senator Ferguson, is there any chance that the president's flexible support program will pass the Senate this time?
Well, personally, I feel that it will pass the Senate. I certainly feel that there are enough people who are concerned with this farm program that the Senate will pass the bill. And I... from last night or a few nights ago, the president made a speech in relation to this farm program, and I think he's correct. When we consider this whole program, it's built around the so-called southern votes. Why have you got peanuts in there? Why have you got tobacco? Why have you cotton?
Because can you get those southern
and
votes
rice
for a flexible support program, Senator?
Well, tobacco wouldn't, because that's regulated by the number of acres that they plant. But the only thing that concerns the real farmer of America is the two crops, corn and wheat. And only 10% of my state's income from farm products are on those two. So we're talking about this great program that's taking millions and actually billions of dollars for two of the main crops. The other are to specialize on these specialized crops.
We have
that is that amount.
We have a number of
you
subjects
must have more subjects
here. I'm sure
Senator,
in a very short time to do it. Mr. Scanlon.
I suppose this question more properly should be addressed to Senator Ferguson, but since it is a subject that has been a source of embarrassment to the Republicans, but I'd like to get the Democratic view on this man and his works. Senator Mahoney, is it your opinion that any Republican congressional candidate who overtly or covertly solicits and receives the support of the junior senator from Wisconsin in the next election will be harmed or would be benefited by the efforts of the senator?
Well, my personal feeling is that Senator McCarthy's support would be the kiss of death.
Why do you say that, Senator?
Because for any Republican candidate running in a district that is not so rock-ribbed Republican, it couldn't be lost. I say that because I believe that most of the thinking Republicans, I believe that the Eisenhower Republicans feel that Senator McCarthy has tried to split his own party, has tried to put himself above his president, has tried to be a one-man Republican Party, and I think has tried to make over the Republican Party in his own image.
Mr. Ahern, you seem to have a question there.
Senator Ferguson, speaking of support, do you intend to invite the support of the citizens for Eisenhower Group in your forthcoming campaign?
Well, I think that the citizens will be in Michigan as they're going to be in all of the states.
Well, I understand that you have to invite their support. They're supporting about 100 candidates at the present time. Do you intend to invite their support?
Well, I didn't know that any particular invitation was necessary. I understood that the Citizens for Eisenhower were formed for the purpose of trying to get people to vote for the candidates that would help to carry out the Eisenhower program. Now, as one of the people in the Senate that is responsible for the Eisenhower program, one who is has helped to make it up, and one who meets weekly and more often to help to carry it out, and who is in a way responsible for coordinating it with the leader in the with the floor leader, I never thought that would be necessary to request. I tell you frankly,
Senator Ferguson, there's been a great deal of talk about Democratic backing of President Eisenhower's program. Do you have any comments with respect to whether the president will need a Republican as distinguished from a Democratic majority in both houses after the November election?
Well, the president in his last press conference this last week clearly told the people that a Republican Congress is going to be essential to carry out his program. Anybody who has lived in America any length of time knows that if a president is to carry out a program, he must have his party in power in order that it can be carried out in the Senate and the House. Now, what they've said about this program in the past hasn't been a fact. 74% of the times the Republicans voted for the program, and only 37 have the Democrats. What did the Democrats do with his program on his desire to amend the Taft-Hartley law? They voted to a man and sent it back. What did they do with his 18-year-old amendment?
Let's have the senator here tell us what they did.
Well, frankly, the Democrats didn't want an anti-labor bill, which was the thing in brewing, and we found from all of the press releases and everything emanating out of the White House that they didn't know what was going on. I mean, it was accepting amendments that would have riddled the whole concept of even the philosophy of Senator Taft on labor. Well, it was a runaway proposition, and the Democrats saw that coming, and we recommitted the bill, and we had very little opposition from the Republicans on that.
You had very little? Every Republican voted against sending it back. The president had agreed to do certain things, and every one of those amendments could be put in and were in the bill, and every Democrat voted to send it back. Now, they're going to say, wait a minute.
Was that accepted?
Well, wait a minute. That hadn't even been voted on. Why didn't you give them a chance to vote on it?
Well, you fellas sent it back straight.
You know why they sent it back? The people will never know what the vote meant by sending it back to committee. They'll go out now and campaign, oh, we were for this amendment or that one.
Senator Mahoney had caved in. On almost every proposed amendment, and there were deals in the making, at least we felt that was true, that would have given you a bill that would have been so violently anti-labor that Senator Taft would, if had he been alive, would have had nothing whatever to do with it.
Now, Mike, that isn't the reason you fellas ganged up.
It certainly
is. You fellas in the South were against it for one purpose, and the fellas in the North were against it. You held a caucus. You decided to a man that you would oppose any amendment. You know that we never voted on one amendment. They wouldn't allow us to vote on one amendment.
Senator Mahoney,
Mr. Hill,
in line with Senator Ferguson's comments, isn't it true that the Democratic delegation has voted to a man against not only Taft-Hartley and the 18-year-old vote, but also on the tax bill?
No, that's not true. I do think we voted almost to a man on the Taft-Hartley recommittal. The 18-year-old was divided. We lost, I think, several members on the 18-year-old to the Republican side. After all, you don't have, I think it was 18 pages of hearings, and then change the Constitution automatically with changing the voting age. And fundamentally, the Democrats are not opposed to 18-year-old voting, but we believe the states have a little right in this government. And we feel that since state only had permitted 18-year-olds to vote, that a few other states should take it up and see whether it's good policy.
As a matter of fact,
I don't think the 18-year-old was a very vital part of this dynamic crusade down there. I never heard the president make a very good case for it or not much conversation. It was just dropped into the hopper.
Why
doesn't he fight on reciprocal trade and a few things like that?
He surrendered without firing a shot.
He repudiated his own commission's recommendation for the Randall Report. He agreed to a simple one-year extension of reciprocal trade. When the Democrats were on the floor the other day discussing the need for trade, not aid, which was originally a sponsored Republican program, only one Republican was on the floor, Senator Bill Nolan, and he did not even mention the debate. I will say the next day, the senator from Michigan briefly talked about it.
But he supported no reduction.
You recommended no further reduction in accordance with the original Eisenhower trade program.
Let me
say a word on that. Here's what happened. We've had before the Ways and Means in the House all these important bills. We have in the Senate Finance all these important bills, the tax bill, the Social Security bill, and the other bills. Now, we're going to take up this reciprocal trade. I know something about it. I said on the floor the day before it came out that we would have an opportunity to vote on it. They were trying to make political hay on the floor that we weren't going to even vote on this reciprocal trade. Now, we don't need the law until the president wants to sign the agreement. He repudiated in his press statement last week what you say, Mike, that he was not backing down from this program. I guaranteed the other day on the floor of the Senate that we would vote on it, but I think that we have a right to have the two committees pass on that bill. If it comes out, and I don't know what it'll come out finally, 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, but as long as we are willing to work on that program, and I am one of those who believe in freer trade, and I think that we ought to have freer trade.
Mr. Scanlon,
but I don't believe in absolute free trade, I don't think Mike does.
Senator Ferguson, I'm sure both sides will concede that the issue of taxes will play a prominent part in the next campaign. Now, do you think, in view of the peril that we face in Indochina, where certainly at the very least we're going to have to put up more money, or at the very worst maybe have armed intervention, that it's wise and provident for this Republican administration to be cutting the budget $500 million for the dividend holders? And if you think that wise and provident, don't you think it would be a little bit more equitable to cut it for the little fellow?
All right. Now, who are the little fellows?
The auto workers of Detroit.
All right.
Go ahead, Senator.
And some of the auto workers of Detroit own some stock. Now, let me put this proposition in the proper light. You're talking about cutting the dividend. What it does is to place a tax reduction on the first $100 of dividends. How many people in America own stocks? Little amounts. It's to promote getting money into business. Every job that is created in America must have $6,000 to $10,000 in machinery and equipment. Who is going to put up the money? Stockholders. Therefore, the aim of this administration is to try and get the small owner of stock to put it up. The first $100 is what he gets his first $20 exemption on.
Senator, can I ask you a technical question about
that? Isn't it true that this dividend benefit goes beyond the first $100 of income? Doesn't it go up to 10% of your dividend income?
It goes 5% the first year.
Yes, and then 10%.
Yes, but this is a way of getting more people interested in investing money in a program to create more jobs. And what we've got to do in America is to create jobs, and where the money comes to create jobs to buy machinery is from the small stockholders.
Senator Monroney,
look at the thousands of
Democratic point of view here for a moment. Senator Monroney?
Perhaps Mr. Hill had a question on
I was thinking of the general economic level in the country.
Senator Monroney,
issue, I have one here.
Mr. Brown.
In view of all the outraged voices being raised by the Democrats about lack of tax reductions, isn't it a bit ironic that only during Republican administrations or in the Republican 80th Congress did the people of America get tax reductions? Isn't that a little ironic?
Let's just look at this.
Go ahead, Senator Monroney.
The reduction in the 80th Congress gave us an unbalanced budget. The Democratic position was that it was more important to balance the budget. The reduction that Eisenhower is fighting for today forces us by $3 to $5 billion in the red. He is the first president in my memory who has ever deliberately tried to force through tax cuts to put us on an unbalanced budget. Not only that, the tax cuts don't go to the average person. The average worker got not one dime in benefit on the 10% tax reduction that was made in the last session. The Social Security tax, give me a minute, please, consumed that reduction. But the man at $10,000, $25,000, and $50,000 received a very heavy reduction, as did the corporations on their excess profits
Senator
tax.
Ferguson. I want to answer that. Now, just think of this argument. That because a man buys further insurance, which is Social Security, and he gets a larger payment on his Social Security benefits, that because he does that, and at the same time he gets a tax reduction of 10%, they try to argue to the people that they're not getting any tax reduction. Now, let me say,
Mr.
Brown,
Senator, is no different.
Now, wait a minute. Take-home pay The man is buying insurance. If he bought more steak, if he bought more bread, if he bought more milk, he would have less money. So he's buying more Social Security. You're right, Mr. Brown.
Well, now, wait a minute. He was asking me the question.
Well, but you answered.
I know, but I haven't completed my answer.
You go ahead and finish your answer, Senator.
But the rest of my statement to Mr. Brown was the man who makes $10,000 or $25,000 receives a reduction of some $3,000 or $4,000 in his take-home pay. And so, consequently, while I do not deny that the little man received a reduction, it was consumed by the half of 1% Social Security. But the big man didn't have to pay it. Now we offer $1 billion solely geared to the big taxpayer on relief and further unbalance the budget.
Senator,
where is this fiscal stability we heard so much about?
We don't have too much time left, and we have a number of other subjects to discuss. Mr. Krebs, you've been very anxious.
Senator Ferguson and Senator Monroney, the question can go both ways. In the view of the emphasis on bipartisan foreign policy that we've heard from Senator Nolan and from the Democrats, do you think that foreign policy should be an issue in the campaign this fall? And if so, what are the points at issue going to be?
Well, I would say that the foreign policy wouldn't be the issue because I believe that it's so conducted that even the Democrats will not object to it. The first time that I know of down here, the President of the United States has on 17 occasions consulted the leadership in both houses in the last 17 months. 33 times they have been up before the committees in the Senate or the House, even more in the House. Now, the President has also said, and we agree, and I don't know of a Democrat that disputes it, that before we go to war, before we intervene with war in Indochina or anywhere else, the Congress of the United States will be consulted, and that's the way it should be.
Well, Senator Ferguson.
Mr. Ahern.
Yes, Mr. Ahern.
Don't you think policy as to Indochina will be an issue in the forthcoming election?
I don't expect it to be.
Senator,
I don't know what other policy we could have unless the Democrats are going to say that we should send our boys in to fight.
But
without the consent of Congress.
Do you agree with the President, Senator Monroney?
I certainly agree with the original question that we're going to do our dead level best to keep foreign policy out of this coming campaign. We've had the position of responsibility for many years. We have had to face the attack of a country divided by partisanship on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And we think the future of our nation depends on the solidarity after we leave the shoreline. And I certainly hope that we will be able to support the President on his foreign policy. We are disturbed, and we will continue to be disturbed on what we feel is a deterioration of our foreign relations. But we certainly hope that this administration will develop a foreign policy and develop a program toward Indochina and the Far East that we will be able to give our wholehearted support to.
Senator Hardin, this is going to be discussed if they aren't in the campaign.
Just a word on
this. Senator Ferguson wants to answer.
They talk about our foreign relations, that they are disturbed because they're deteriorating. Now, let me say this, that the only reason why they can say that is that we ask our allies, what are you going to do to Britain, to France, and the others? Your administration previously were afraid to ask them because you knew that they weren't in sympathy with your program, but they were going along just on the surface. Now, what we want to do, and we intend to do this, that before we get into these situations, we're going to ask them in no uncertain words, are you with us or are you not?
Senator,
and that's what we did in this situation, and that's why they say it's deteriorating, because Britain answered, we don't want to go ahead until after Geneva. Wasn't it better to find
that out?
Almost everyone that I have followed in the newspapers and the magazines recently have said that the Grand Alliance has deteriorated, while under the Democrats it was rather cohesive. And I do not understand how this deterioration could take place with the massive consultation, shall we say, that you claim is going on under this administration when it was so cohesive and so effective under our administration.
Well, Mike, I know something about these consultations. I happen to be a member of the Foreign Relations Committee, and therefore I sit in on them. And I happen to be a member of the leadership that sit in with your leadership.
Well,
and I know
some
consultations are going on.
Well, isn't it maybe a fact, Senator, that the foreign nations are just a little bit afraid of a rather thin bluff, the massive retaliation and all of the big talk without any determination to go through with this big talk.
Well, wait a minute, though. Senator? That's what we're asking our allies. What do you intend to do? Are you with us or are you not? We're trying to find...
Senator Monroney, may I shift just one more time? There's been a great deal of talk about economic recession. Do you think that's going to be a major issue in the...
I believe it will be a issue where it affects specific lines. I personally have never held to the theory that we're going to have a gigantic economic collapse. I do think the depression in the farm area, which is quite severe and growing worse, and the administration not doing anything about it, will be an issue. I think it will be an issue perhaps in unemployment in Michigan, defense cuts and other things have caused the lack of production there. I think you will have spotted areas where unemployment and where the failure in one particular line has robbed us of our economy and of our prosperity in that particular area.
Mr. Carson.
I'd like to ask Senator Ferguson on that point whether he thinks the administration is doing all it can to avert any serious recession.
Yes, I do. And that's why I'm so anxious to get this tax bill through, because I think that the tax bill has more to do with the economic condition than anything
else.
Will
that affect the average purchasing power of the average American?
Yes, it will. It'll affect the average purchasing power because it's going to stimulate business. And when you stimulate business, like the construction business, and it's the greatest now that we've ever had, so that I feel that this tax bill has a lot to do with it.
A few seconds, Senator Monroney.
It's the same old trickle-down tax policy of Andrew Mellon. The Republicans will fight reductions for the lower-income groups where mass purchasing power is needed.
Now the
Monroney,
first time...
Go ahead, Senator Ferguson.
I just want to say this. You were right, Mr. Hill, when you said, or someone here...
I'm sorry.
Said,
I must interrupt, Senator. Right. I wish you didn't have to.
Is the time up?
Our time is up.
I'm sorry. I'd like to
say
that the Republicans only... reduce taxes.
Well, you said it, too.
And thank you, gentlemen. We certainly thank our guests today, Senator Homer Ferguson, Republican of Michigan, and Senator Mike Monroney, Democrat of Oklahoma. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here with us today.